Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is October 17th, 2019, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Boogie Wonderland for First Pass Success. And our guest skeptic is Missy Carter. She is a former City of Bremerton firefighter paramedic, currently a physician assistant practicing in emergency medicine in the Seattle area, and an adjunct faculty member with the Tacoma Community College Paramedic Program. Welcome back to the SGEM, Missy.
Thanks so much for having me, Ken.
Well, last time you were here was for SGEM number 247. And saying that out loud, I just can't believe I've done over 200 podcasts. But that was looking at supraglottic airways for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. And now you're back with the SGEM, talking bougies. What got you so interested in airways?
Well, it definitely stemmed back to my days in EMS as a medic. I was only about 20 years old when I went to paramedic school. And coming out of school, I had less than 20 intubations. And to be honest, not a lot of difficult airway training. I really had to learn kind of by trial and error. At the time, we didn't have a good grasp on the importance of first pass success. We didn't really understand how interruptions in CPR for airway management could affect patient outcomes. It wasn't until I started precepting paramedic students that I realized we had a huge gap between what we're teaching medic students and what they need to know to manage these difficult airways. I have to admit, my love affair for the bougie itself started when I missed my first intubation. My partner at the time, Doug, was a veteran of about 27 years. He pulled out what I thought was a magical device he called the gum elastic bougie. I think a little ray of sunshine came down on his forehead as he passed the tube with ease, and I was on the bandwagon. Since then, I've done my best to pay it forward. I do my best to give medics access to the best airway evidence and techniques. And yes, I've gotten a little nerdy on the way.
Well, you know, Missy, it is about the ABC, so why not start with A for airway? I get it. I understand. And believe me, I've learned a lot from my mistakes or things that haven't gone well. You get a lot better at them after that first, shall we call it a failure? So yeah, great, great learning experience. Can you give us a case though?
I'd love to. You're preparing for a rapid sequence intubation in a patient who's suffering from respiratory distress. While doing your airway assessment, you notice some difficult characteristics. Your patient is obese and they have a very small mouth opening. In the past, you've had a failed attempt on a similar patient. You ended up using the bougie as your backup device and you were successful. You wonder if this time, would you be more successful if you used the bougie on your first attempt?
Well, we've covered airway a number of times on the SGEM. This has included the aforementioned supraglottic airways for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, but we've also looked at POCUS for confirming endotracheal tube placement and non-invasive positive pressure ventilation for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, just to name a few. However, we have never covered the issue of a bougie for intubation.
For many years, the bougie's been considered a backup or a rescue airway tool and only pulled out after one or even several failed intubation attempts. Many studies have shown that multiple intubation attempts can increase mortality and morbidity for our patients. So we're always striving to increase that first pass success rate and improve our patient outcomes.
What's the clinical question?
Does using the bougie increase first pass success for intubation?
And the reference?
The reference is Driver et al., The Bougie and First Pass Success in the Emergency Department, Annals of Emergency Medicine, 2017.
All right, let's run through the PICO. What was the population?
This was adult patients, over 17 years old, who underwent intubation in the emergency department.
And they excluded patients with missing videos that recorded the intubation, cases which a bougie was used with a hyperangulated video laryngoscope blade like the GlideScope, or were intubated before arrival to the emergency department. How about the intervention?
The intervention was bougie with a Macintosh or a CMAC laryngoscope.
And what did they compare it to?
They compared it to intubation with endotracheal tube and stylet.
Let's run through the outcomes. What was the primary outcome?
primary outcome is first pass success rates.
And the secondary outcomes?
Duration of attempts, hypoxia, and esophageal intubations.
So the author's conclusions were, quote, bougie was associated with increased first pass intubation success. Bougie use may be helpful in emergency department intubation, end of quote. All right, let's run through that quality checklist, and this one will be for observational studies. So the first question, did the study address a clearly focused issue?
Yes.
And did the authors use an appropriate method to answer their question?
Yes, to answer whether or not there was an association.
Yeah, because we're not going to get to causation with this type of study design. So if they just wanted to know if there was an association, this was a reasonable way to do that. Was the cohort recruited in an acceptable way?
Yes.
Was the exposure accurately measured to minimize bias?
Yes. They used video reviews by 3 trained investigators who were blinded to the study aims.
And was the outcome accurately measured to minimize bias?
Yeah. Successful intubation was defined as confirmed endotracheal placement by the treating physician. Usually this was done with waveform capnography, and there was no subsequent intubation attempts.
And have the authors identified all important confounding factors?
Yeah, I think so.
Was the follow-up of subjects complete enough?
Yes.
How precise are the results?
Fairly precise given the small sample size.
Missy, do you believe the results?
Yeah, for a single center study, I do believe the results.
Can the results be applied to the local population?
Unsure about this.
And did the results fit with other available evidence?
Yes. There are some anesthesia studies that show some improved success with the bougie.
All right, let's go through the key results. There were almost 600 patients included in the cohort. The median age was in the late 40s, and more than 2/3 were male. The vast majority, and what I mean by vast majority, 95%, of the intubations were performed by a senior resident. But what was the key result?
First pass success was greater with than without the bougie.
Yeah, it was 95% with the bougie versus 86% without the bougie, and that gave you an absolute difference of 9%. How about the secondary outcomes?
Median first attempt duration was actually higher with the bougie than without. 40 seconds versus 27 seconds. So it took about 13 seconds longer to intubate with the bougie than without in this study.
The other secondary outcome was hypoxia, and that was 17% with the bougie and 13% without the bougie.
Esophageal intubation was equal in both groups, 1 and 1.
All right, Missy, I know it's been 8 months, but do you remember how to talk nerdy?
I sure do.
Okay, then you get number one.
So our first nerdy point is external validity. This was clearly a bougie center of excellence. Of the 543 intubations included in this study, 435 used the bougie as the first time airway tool. This raises the question of generalizability. If providers in this center are more proficient with the use of the bougie than the average emergency medicine clinician, will we see different results if we put the bougie in the hands of someone who does not use it on a regular basis?
In addition, 95% of the intubations were done by residents. Does this have external validity to a non-teaching site where the attending physician is performing most of the intubations? The next point, though, is about missing data. Although these cases were consecutive, 83 cases had to be excluded due to missing video. The videos, in addition to chart review, were the primary data collection tool. The authors addressed this limitation with a sensitivity analysis that showed the bougie would still be superior.
The third nerdy point is about associations. The retrospective nature of this study makes it difficult to eliminate any bias. They did their best to mitigate this by using multiple reviewers for each of the videos, looking from multiple angles. 3 separate investigators watched all the cases from 3 separate cameras. They were blinded to the study goal and simply reported information on a standardized form. However, it's not a randomized trial, so we cannot claim causation, only association between bougie and first pass successor.
All right, the fourth point is about why use the bougie. It is unknown why the bougie was used in each case. The authors attempted to identify difficult airway characteristics like obesity, cervical spine immobilization, presence of abnormal anatomy, facial trauma, masses, and bodily fluids that could have influenced the operator's decisions. They also screened for hypoxia and esophageal intubations. These characteristics were about the same between groups, which suggests that the providers used bougies as a first-line device, regardless of difficult airway characteristics. And I think that's why you originally had said this was clearly a bougie center of excellence.
Nerdy point number five, patient-oriented outcomes. They use first-pass success rates, duration, and hypoxia as surrogate markers. Important patient-oriented outcomes would have been survival and survival with good neurologic outcome.
While there was a longer time for endotracheal tube insertion with a bougie than without, and it was like 13 seconds, it's unlikely that this was a clinically important difference.
Rates of hypoxia among the two groups were pretty similar, 13% with and 17% without the bougie. Unfortunately, there is some missing data on hypoxia. In total, there was 181 cases of missing data. 114 of them were missed on the video feed, and 67 of them were missed due to poor waveform. It is possible that this missing information may have shown a significant increase in hypoxia for bougie patients.
All right, that's enough nerdiness for right now. Let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
We agree with the author's conclusions.
Then, Missy, give me a bottom line.
The use of bougie is associated with increased first-pass success rates for intubations in the emergency department, but a randomized control trial is needed to further explore this topic.
And how are you going to take this paper from Driver back in 2017 and apply it clinically?
Well, wait, Ken, we have more. We're going to do two papers today on the SGEM, and the second paper is a randomized control trial looking at this exact issue by the same lead author.
Well, that is great. Then why don't you give me the reference?
Driver et al. Effect of use of a bougie versus endotracheal tube and stylet on first-pass intubation success among patients with difficult airways undergoing emergency intubation. A randomized clinical trial, JAMA, in May of 2018.
All right, let's do that PICO again. Was it the same population?
Yes, it was patients over 17 years of age who underwent intubation in the emergency department. The difference here is the attending physician planned to use a Macintosh laryngoscope blade on the first attempt.
All right, and there were some exclusions. They excluded prisoners, suspected or known pregnant patients, and patients with known distortion of the upper airway or glottic structure. What was the intervention?
The intervention was bougie with a Macintosh or a CMAC laryngoscope.
And what did they compare it to?
Intubation with endotracheal tube and stylet.
What about the outcomes?
The outcome was first pass intubation success.
Yeah, that was the primary outcome. How about the secondary outcomes?
So the secondary outcome was similar to the first study. Duration of attempts, hypoxemia, which they specified as SpO2 less than 90% or a decrease by 10%, and esophageal intubations.
The author's conclusions were, quote, in this emergency department, use of a bougie compared with an endotracheal tube plus stylet resulted in significantly higher first attempt intubation success among patients undergoing emergency endotracheal intubation. However, these findings should be considered provisional until the generalizability is assessed in other institutions and settings. End of quote. Well, this time we have 11 questions for randomized clinical trials. So, first question, are these emergency department patients?
Yes.
Were they adequately randomized?
Yes. They were randomized 1-to-1 to each group using permuted blocks of random size. To accomplish equity of the difficult airway characteristics among the groups, they further stratified the patients, those with obesity or cervical immobilization and those without.
Did they conceal the randomization process?
Yes, they used opaque envelopes.
And the patients, were they analyzed in the groups to which they were randomized?
Yes, this was an intention to treat analysis. More about this in the nerdy section.
Did they recruit consecutively?
Yes.
And were both groups similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Yes, there were two subgroups, those with difficult airway characteristics and those without. For the primary outcome, they required to have at least one difficult characteristic. This and other factors were spread equally among the groups. The laryngeal views reported for each group were similar as well.
All participants, were they unaware of group allocation?
No, not at all. If the clinicians were blinded, the first pass success rates would have been much worse in both arms. Patients, hopefully, were not awake, so I suspect they were blinded. The research assistants were not blinded, as they prospectively collected and processed the outcome data until 1 minute after each intubation attempt.
All groups, were they treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes. All other factors, such as type of blade used, medication given, cricoid pressure, and positioning, were left up to the physician. There were two laryngoscope types included in this study, the standard Macintosh blade and the CMAC video laryngoscope. Now this, if you're not familiar, is a standard geometry blade with a video on the end. They excluded any hyperangulated video laryngoscopes.
Was the follow-up complete?
Yes, A+, 100%.
Did they consider all patient important outcomes?
No, the study was not looking at mortality or survival or good neurologic outcome.
And the 11th question, the final question, was the treatment effect large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
Yes.
All right, here are the key results. They enrolled 757 patients that included 380 with a difficult airway characteristic. The mean age was in the mid-40s, with more than two-thirds being male. The vast majority, about 85%, were intubated by a senior resident or fellow. Only 1% were intubated by emergency medicine faculty. The rest were intubated by junior residents. Okay, what was the key result?
First pass success was greater with the bougie than without.
Yeah, it was 96% with bougie and 82% without bougie, giving an absolute difference of 14%. How about the secondary outcomes?
Medium first attempt duration was actually similar in this study. It was 38 seconds with the bougie and 36 seconds without the bougie.
And hypoxemia was also similar, 13 versus 14%.
Esophageal intubations were 0 versus 3.
All right, here we go. One episode of the SGEM, two opportunities to talk nerdy. Are you feeling it?
I'm feeling nerdy.
All right, go ahead.
So, first nerdy point is about external validity. The big money question we all have is about generalizability. This trial was performed in a single center that has a known love affair with the bougie. So, healthy skepticism for bias is warranted. This raises the question if adding the bougie to a center which is unfamiliar with a device, would that be beneficial? Sometimes the best method is simply the method that you know best. Another thing is that only 1% of the intubations done in this study were done by an attending physician. Would the bougie be as helpful to a seasoned physician working in a non-teaching community setting? Perhaps the bougie would help in a rural setting in a critical access hospital, for clinicians who don't intubate often, or, might I say, for pre-hospital providers who aren't getting high volume of intubations.
Well, I'm glad you added the rural part because, as you know, I spend a lot of my time providing rural emergency medicine, so I like that. All right, point number two, and this is about intention to treat analyses. This was an ITT analysis with 98% adherence in the bougie arm and 92% adherence in the stylet arm, meaning some physicians in the stylet arm chose bougie for the first pass attempt due to their clinical judgment. There were 25 cases of crossover from stylet to bougie and only 4 cases of crossover to stylet from the bougie arm. This was a 7% protocol violation in favor of using the bougie for difficult airways or need for rapid intubation, per the article. This did not affect the study's final results, as these intubations had a high first-pass success rate for the Stilac group.
Secondary outcomes. Various secondary outcomes were explored, including hypoxia and the incidence of pneumothorax. Unlike the observational trial, which raised concern for hypoxia in the Bougie group, this study did not show a difference between the groups. There have been previous studies suggesting an association between Bougie use and pneumothorax due to the trauma while inserting at the carina. Those trials used a straight Bougie, whereas this trial used the coude tip. In this study, complications were rare. Pneumothorax after intubation without a known cause was seen in 9 patients in each group. Esophageal intubation was seen in 3 patients in the Stilac group and 0 patients in the Bougie group. None of these complications were significant. You can review these in Table 5.
The fourth nerdy point is about subgroup analyses. Although the trial was powered for success rates with difficult intubations, they did an interesting subgroup analysis of success rates as follows. They looked at patients without difficult characteristics, inline immobilization, obese patients, and patients with Cormac-Lehane grades 2-4. Each favored the Bougie, suggesting routine Bougie use as beneficial in all airways, but some much more than others.
Nerdy point number 5, patient-oriented outcomes. The outcomes were only measured until 1 minute after the end of the first intubation attempt. Again, they used first pass success, duration, and hypoxia as surrogate markers. We know from other studies that first pass success is tied to mortality and morbidity, but this study didn't look at patient-oriented outcomes such as mortality or survival with good neurologic function. Those would have been more patient-oriented.
All right, time to comment on the author's conclusions and compare to the MiesGems conclusions.
We generally agree with the author's conclusions.
All right, a second bottom line, Missy.
Consider using the Bougie to improve your first pass success rates in routine intubations and in those with some difficult airway characteristics.
And can you resolve the case you presented?
You decide to use the Bougie on your first attempt for this patient. You make sure that your team is ready with the ET tube. You visualize a grade 2 view, and you slip the coude tip under the epiglottis and through the cords. You feel the rumble strips as you advance, and you feel a hold-up sign at the carina. Your handy respiratory therapist slides the ET tube over the Bougie, and you advance it to the proper depth. You have equal lung sounds on both sides, and you confirm tube placement with end-tidal capnography.
Wow, that's great. Got the intubation. But you know what I was impressed? You had an RT. We don't have an RT usually in a rural hospital, so I just preload the ET tube over the Bougie in advance. All right, I'm going to give the clinical application. It all depends. Wow, I'm sure you're surprised I said that. I personally use a Bougie only as a rescue and have only missed one airway in 24 years. There is one of the docs in my shop who uses it all the time and he thinks it's great, and that's fine. I think if you're comfortable with it and have great success, then carry on with what works for you. However, if you struggled in the past and found yourself reaching for the Bougie more often than you would like as a rescue device, then consider using it for the first attempt.
I think the Bougie can also be especially helpful for novice intubators. This study had 99% residents doing the intubation. So if you are a new intubator or a pre-hospital provider who is not getting the volume of intubations that would give you ideal first pass success rates, then this is a great tool to consider as your first line.
I think that's an excellent point to make, and that's why I started with it all depends. How you apply the literature in your clinical practice will be different. The literature is what it is, the data says what it says, but it shouldn't dictate our care. We need to still interpret that and apply it clinically, and that depends on your clinical judgment. And so if you've got lots of experience, you may or may not need a Bougie, or you may or may not like to use it all the time. But if you're learning, or if you're not having a high volume of intubation, this may or may not be an excellent tool to add when you're intubating. All right, we still have to say, what are you going to tell the patient?
Probably not a whole lot, since your patient is preoccupied, breathing, and hopefully they are still unresponsive since they are intubated.
All right, time to announce the Keener Contest winner. Last week's winner was Dr. Robert Allen, a PGY2 EM resident from sunny downstate Kings County Hospital Center. Robbie knew that TXA was first made in 1962. Missy, what's the question this week?
In 1949, Sir Robert R. McIntosh first used a device that he called the gum elastic bougie as a tracheal introducer. What was this device actually designed for? And what is the proper name for the device that we refer to as the bougie today?
Oh, so what you're saying is that Sir Robert R. McIntosh grabbed a device that was used for something else and called something else. Basically, McIntosh MacGyvered something.
Amen. I think there was duct tape involved.
Oh. Now, we'll have to check. We'll have to fact check. Did duct tape exist in 1949? I don't know, actually. But if you know the answer to this week's Keener contest, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. There are some other FOMED sites that have discussed the bougie, and I'll list those in the show notes. But I want to thank you, Missy, for coming back on the SGEM and doing two papers this time. Does that mean next time we're going to do three papers?
I do love a good threefer, Ken.
All right, sounds good. But you told me that you had an extra special person to read the SGEM tagline. And this is your daughter, Audrey. She's 13 years old. And of course, I think it's never too early to encourage skepticism. So Audrey, tell the SGEMers the tagline.
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.